We must be all mad to be, this is the hottest day of the year. Here we are inside listening to a talk on the labour theory of value. But I mean, the reason why I thought this would be useful to do is that a few meetings back we were discussing something else, and a couple of members, well, I didn't say challenge, but question the usefulness of the labour theory of value. So I thought it'd be a good idea to state what it says and then see how any misconceptions about it might have arisen. Now, I want to start by talking about what might be called the labour theory of wealth. I mean, this applies in all human societies, not just capitalism, and of course it includes socialism. Wealth is something that is useful to humans to survive and to thrive in nature. Now, like all animals and organisms, we get what we need from the rest of nature. I mean, some is provided free, such as the sun's light and heat and the air that we breathe, but most wealth is produced by humans reshaping materials that originally came from nature into something useful to them. I mean, some other animals do this to a very limited extent, but changing nature to satisfy needs is one of the key factors distinguishing us from other animals. I mean, all new wealth is produced by us exercising our mental and physical energies to transform, as I said, materials that originally came from nature. It can only be created by humans working. I mean, this can't be denied. It's just a fact of human life. In fact, what we mean by production is precisely working to transform parts of the rest of nature into something useful for us, which is the definition of wealth. Now, it doesn't necessarily follow from this that whenever items of wealth are produced for sale, the price of those items is determined by the total amount of work required to produce them from start to finish. In other words, it doesn't, this theory, labor theory of wealth doesn't necessarily imply the labor theory of value. On the other hand, it does mean that even if the price of items of wealth is not a reflection of the amount of labor required to produce them, they are the product of human labor, and so therefore any incomes derived from selling them. Now, the labor theory of value only applies in societies where items of wealth are produced for sale, in particular capitalism, where in fact wealth takes the form of value in the sense that it has an exchange value or price. But first, some definitions. Well, already defined a commodity. It's an item of wealth that's produced for sale. Now, labor is the work done producing a commodity. Value is the amount of labor required to produce a commodity from start to finish. Exchange value is how much a commodity will exchange for other commodities, and price is how much a commodity will exchange for money, how much it will sell for. Now, there are, I say, to come to some simple misconceptions and objections. Now, the first one, and this is put forward by people who think that value and price is determined by the usefulness of something. I mean, they point out that the labor spent on producing something useless doesn't give it an exchange value. I mean, this is true. Something that is of no use to anybody just isn't wealth. Labor spent on producing it is a waste of time. So for a start, the labor theory of value only applies to useful products, useful commodities. The second objection is that the labor theory of value is saying that all labor spent on producing something counts towards its exchange value. And this is not true. It's only the labor required to produce a commodity that is taken into account. That is the labor of a standard worker or workforce working under standard conditions. Labor beyond this does not count, and again is wasted labor. It doesn't add any value. I mean, this is obvious. Otherwise, the slow or inefficient workers will produce the most value. A third objection is that not everything that has a price is a product of labor. Once again, this is true. Where there is already widespread commodity production and exchange, anything and everything can be sold without being a product of labor. I mean, honor, information would be a couple of examples. I mean, so is land and the resources on and under it. in these cases, the labour theory of value does not apply. The price of such products is fixed by paying demand in relation to its supply. A fourth objection is that the price of some products is out of all proportion to the labour spent on it. And I said this is true, but it's irrelevant because the theory only applies to items of wealth that can be produced. Thinking of things like works of art. I mean, they're not determined by the amount of labour that the artist has put in to producing them. I mean, being unique or in limited quantity, the price is once again determined by the pay and demand for them. Another objection is that the price always reflects the amount of labour spent on an item of wealth. When I say price, I mean the market price. I mean, this isn't true. I mean, depending on market conditions, the price at which a commodity sells can be above its value. That's the case when pay and demand is greater than the supply for sale, or below when supply exceeds demand. I mean, the market price will only be the same as their value when supply and demand balance each other, which is generally the case, or will tend to be the case anyway, in the medium term. The last simple objection is that it's only the labour spent on the last stage of production that counts. I mean, this isn't true. It's a common error made by some critics of the theory who say that the labour theory of value does not take into account the value transferred, I mean, they would say added, from the materials worked on or the buildings or the machines which are used to produce the commodity. But the labour theory of value says that the value of a commodity is determined by the amount of labour required to produce it from start to finish, which includes the labour required at the early stages of its production, including mining the raw material, processing it, transporting it, and so on. And these are simple misunderstandings. Once cleared up, it can be seen that the labour theory of value is not a theory to explain the price of everything that is bought and sold, but only of those items of wealth produced for sale that can be reproduced, can be created again, which, as I say, is not the case with works of art. It argues that the value of such commodities is determined by the amount of labour required by standard workers working under standing conditions to produce a commodity from start to finish. And this is the simple stuff, but there's more complicated stuff, which was added by Marx to later, added later by Marx to earlier versions of the theory. And one is that after it has been produced, the value of a commodity can change. I mean, this happens, for instance, when some new technical or other development after an existing stock of unsold commodities was produced, reduces the amount of labour required to produce it. In this case, and as a result of this, the value of the existing stock will fall. I mean, this is why the labour theory of value says that the value of a commodity is determined not by the labour required to produce it so much as by the labour required to produce more of it, as I say, to reproduce it. As such, reductions in value apply not only to consumer goods, but to producer goods, machines, for instance. These are also commodities and devalue when the use of a new, more performing machine begins to come into use, which makes the old one less useful, even obsolete. Commodities can also lose their value when there are too many of them in relation to the paying demand for them, which the paying demand is never going to catch up. In effect, labour spent on producing them has become wasted labour. And the other addition that Marx made, it might be surprising, incidentally, is that even in the long run, commodities don't necessarily exchange at their value. In fact, most of the time, most of them don't. As I say, this might come as a surprise and has been seen by critics as a refutation or contradiction in the labour theory of value, as it's conceding that most commodities don't exchange at their labour value. In Volume 1 of Capital, Marx says that they do, but in Volume 3, he says that they don't, but that they normally sell at their cost of production, which is all the various costs, including wages, plus a markup for profit, which he called their production price or their price of production. And I don't want to go into detail why, It has to do with the fact that capital, wherever it is invested, has to tend to make the same rate of profit. Otherwise, the more labor-intensive industries would make more profit than the less intensive ones, which they don't. All capitals tend to make the same rate of profit. In any event, this is how, in practice, businesses fix the price of what they're selling. So if you're just looking at how businesses act, this is the theory of price that you will come up with. But what it means is that the labor theory of value is not a theory of the price of individual commodities. It applies fully only at the level of the whole economy, what economists would call the macro level, where total costs of production equals total value of inputs and total profits equals total surplus value. In fact, it's impossible to explain the level of the market for profits. As Marx was saying, that the commodities tend to sell at their price of production, which is their cost of production, including wages, plus a market for profits. It's impossible to explain the level of this markup without taking into account that the amount of surplus value produced and which is available for distribution to various businesses according to the amount of capital invested in them. Now, the consequences of this is that you can come across a problem when trying to apply the labor theory of value to the price of individual commodities, if you like, at micro level. This is because the price of a commodity does not exactly reflect the amount of labor required to produce it, except in an industry which happens to have the same composition of capital as of wages in relation to the other elements of capital. Except in this accidental case, the price of a commodity does not equal the labor required to produce it from start to finish. But it will still incorporate labor applied at all stages of its production. This may be less, or it may be more, than the value added at a particular stage. It's the same with the profit. I mean, the profit of a business does derive from the exploitation of workers, but it doesn't derive, it doesn't necessarily derive from the exact amount produced by its own workers. In effect, the whole working class is exploited by the whole capitalist class, and not the workers in one business or industry, just by their employer there. And this, I'm just suggesting, I don't know if it's true or not, this may be a reason why some members have been expressing doubts about the validity or at least the usefulness of the labor theory of value when applied to the real world of pricing. So in the end, we can come back to the labor theory of wealth. I mean, it's enough on its own to explain that workers are economically exploited. All new wealth is produced by labor alone, so any non-work property income has to come from the labor of those who work. I mean, the labor theory of value explains this too, but it's needed to explain how the capitalist economy functions at the level of the whole economy. For instance, explaining the effect of the value of what has been produced for sale changing after it has been produced on how the capitalist economy works, especially what happens in the course of business or trade or boom slump cycle. But to analyze how the capitalist economy works and why it works in the way it does, you still need to know what value is, since this is the form which wealth takes, the wealth being the product of human work or materials that originally came from nature. Wealth under capitalism takes the form of value. That is why you need to explain the things I was talking about at the beginning as to what value is and how it's added and the various objections to it. But I think it mustn't be assumed that each individual commodity does, in fact, in practice, exchange at its value. So that's my introduction, dealing with some simple objections to the labor theory of value and dealing with some more complicated ones to what Marx added to previous versions of the theory. So over to you, Chair.